So we're gonna. Last week we dealt with the Shir Shal Yom, the song for Thursday, and today we'll deal with the song for Friday. So what happened on Friday? In creation on Friday. A lot happened. In terms of a lot happened over the course of the day, but just for in terms of the creation itself, what happened on Friday was that Hashem, God, created the animals, and then He also created Adam and Chava. He created mankind, and Friday also then leads directly into Shabbos. So we'll deal with Shabbos next week, but it leads directly into Shabbos. And the themes sort of overlap a little bit. Because it's so close to Shabbos, the themes somewhat overlap. In fact, the song for Friday, which we'll see, it's very short, it's only five psukim, five verses, that song that we say on Friday, Friday morning, we also say that Friday night. We say it Friday night, it's part of Kabbalah Shabbos. It's at the end of it. After L'chadodi, it's at the very end of it. So we say the same exact paragraph that we say for Friday morning, we also say as we enter into Shabbos. So the themes do somewhat overlap. The same paragraph that's used for Friday could also be used for Shabbos.
Why? If we're entering into Shabbos, we're entering into the seventh day. So why would you be saying...
Why would it be the same...
Yeah.
So we say more. That's not the song for Shabbos. It's okay. Not the on Shabbos day we have the Shir Shal Yom for Shabbos. That's a different one, which we'll do next week. But it is the general theme could apply also to Shabbos. We'll see. We'll see how it all connects.
Okay.
So what would you think should be a theme as creation is reaching its completion, or it is becoming complete through actual God's direct intervention of creating different things on each day. So then that's completed, and then God creates the concept of Teva, of nature, to run its course for the rest of history. So what would be a theme for Friday?
Gratitude and celebration.
Gratitude and celebration is a good one, yes. Okay, any others? What would you think would happen at the end of creation?
The concept of rest.
So that's Shabbos. We'll get to that's okay. Shabbos is the concept of rest. But at the end of creation, so I think one of the themes we'll see in this paragraph, in this chapter of Tehillim, is the concept of stability. So we just had the completion of creation.
Okay.
And now we have to run the world.
I was going
to
say creation, about how everything kind of comes together.
Oh, that's also great. How everything comes together. At the end of creation, everything's coming together.
And wouldn't there be a sense of accomplishment of some sort? I mean, from man's level, when you've completed such a huge project.
But man didn't complete it.
No, but I'm just...
You're saying
from our perspective, when the rabbi asks, like, what would you think would be the ideas of at the end of this? From a godly state, I'm not certain, but from a man's state of things, it would be normal to review your project and be happy with the accomplishment.
That's satisfaction. It's an interesting point. It says on the sixth day, it says Yom HaShishi.
Yeah.
Usually it says Yom Revi'i, Yom Shlishi. Here it says Yom HaShishi with an extra hey. Why do we have the extra hey? It's there to remind us of the sixth day. What's it referring to? It's referring to when we got the Torah. It's the five books that we when we got the Torah was on the sixth day.
Yeah.
Because it's there to tell us that creation is really not complete. That wasn't the ultimate goal of God creating the world is not the creation of the world.
Right.
But it's for us. It's for us to then serve
recognize.
God. So it's true. There is some sense of completion here in terms of the creation of the world. But ultimately, the ultimate purpose, so there can be a complete celebration here because the real purpose of the world is for when we get the Torah, thousands of years later. And then not just when we get the Torah, but also as the Jewish people live for centuries, how we keep the Torah and we have that relationship with God. That's the ultimate celebration. So there is some level of completion here, but the Torah is telling us Yom HaShishi that you have to realize that there's some level of completion here, but it's not really complete. It's only going to be complete once we get the Torah. It's very interesting that it's some level of completeness, but it's not totally complete. This is just a pitch for tonight. I'm giving a class tonight. why didn't God give the Torah on the sixth day?
At 8 o'clock tonight?
I'm giving it at 8 o'clock. They're having mincha. They're having mincha service. And then 8:15. No, this is at Beit Midrash.
Beit Midrash.
At 8:15. Basically, we're starting at 8:15.
Thank you.
Okay. But why didn't God give the Torah right away? Why did he have to wait almost 2,000 years?
Because he gave the Torah to man, and man wasn't created.
Man was created on the sixth day.
Yeah. Man wasn't ready to receive the Torah, though.
Well.
Okay, we'll discuss it. We'll discuss it.
That's my understanding is. Like that. We weren't ready to...
Yeah, we'll see. Yes.
I have a question. When you said the hay refers to the sixth
day... The sixth day.
Is there any place that the hay refers to the connection with Hashem to that word? Because last week when we did the...
We did that
Thursday,
for Yehosef. Yehosef. Yeah, so that... Yeah, for sure.
To me, it just... It was an instant, okay, Hashem is with him. In this.
Yeah.
It's like there is a stronger...
Yeah, so there's definitely an example. Yep. That's an example where the hay is referring to Hashem.
Yeah.
And I would have to think of other examples.
There is.
Sarai. Avraham, the added hay for Avram. Avram changes from Avram, yeah.
Avram
to Avraham.
Nachon.
So there are
so
examples.
Could that be like the hay on
Hashishi?
Is that like it's really enveloped? Hashem is encasing all of it? More so than just a regular.
I guess it's possible. The rabbis in the Medrash and also in the Talmud, so they say it's referring to Hashishi to emphasize the sixth. It's like the sixth day, referring to the sixth of Sivan when we receive the Torah, which will be in a few weeks on Shavuos. But it's an interesting idea. But the rabbis take a different approach in the Talmud. So in terms of creation, I would also think of stability. That okay, God created the world, but what path is the world now going to go in? What's going to now happen? Where's this going to lead us? So we'll see how some of these themes will come up as we go through this very short chapter of Tehillim. I heard once that the reason why it's so short, I think this is the shortest of all the 7 days. The reason why this is so short is why? Do you have a reason?
Everybody's busy on Friday.
Everyone's busy on Friday.
Yeah.
Friday's the busiest day of the week.
It hasn't worked on life itself.
So they had pity on us. Okay, so let's go to source one. Why do we say this? Bishishi, this is the Talmud. The Talmud says, the Gemara says, Bishishi hayu omrim, on the sixth day we would say, this chapter 93 of Tehillim, Hashem malach yuz lavesh, why al shem shegamar malachto umalach alehen. On that day, Hashem completed his work. He completed his work of the 6 days of creation. We'll see on the seventh day whether God created rest on the seventh day or it's just the day of rest. We'll see that next week. Umalach alehen. And God also ruled over all of creation. He was able to be the king. Perhaps he was able to become the king now because, we'll actually get to this, because he created Adam and Chava, who can now, you can only have be a king if there are, if you have people to acknowledge the king. So once Adam and Chava are created, so then we have people in the world to then glorify the king.
And you can only give the Torah on the sixth day if there are people to give it to.
That's correct, but we didn't get it on that day. They didn't get the Torah on that day.
They got it
almost 2,000 years later.
On the sixth day.
On the sixth day of Sivan. On the sixth day of Sivan.
Okay.
On Shavuos. When Shavuos comes, that's when they got the Torah. Okay, so let's go through this paragraph. And there's a few interesting themes here. Hashem malach geus lavesh. Hashem malach, Hashem, I think the English translation here is incorrect. It says Hashem is king. Malach is what tense? Let me know what. It's in the past.
Tense.
It's past tense. Hashem malach, Hashem was king. Hashem was king. Geus lavesh. He is wearing geus. Geut.
Yeah,
what do you think geut means? Geus is like, it's like, it's clothing of like a king. He's of grandeur. It's also interesting that geus also means haughtiness. It also means haughtiness that, but in this context, it doesn't really mean haughtiness. It really means that, I guess, of a, in a positive
splendor.
Sense of like splendor and self, God doesn't need self-esteem, but like that type of confidence,
more
that type
like,
of idea.
More like enveloped. He is enveloped in grandeur.
Yeah, he's enveloped with But the word that's used is clothing, lovesh, which we'll get to. We'll try to explain why does the Tehillim use that word of clothing? Lovesh Hashem uz hisazar. Hashem also he wears strength. He has strength. Af tikon tevel bal timot. The world stands firm. Bal timot, it cannot be shaken. So I think this last phrase very much connects to the concept of stability. Av tikon teva bal timot, the world will not be shaken. The second verse, Nachon kisacha me'az me'olam ata. Your throne, kisacha, your throne stands firm me'az, from forever. Already it has been existing from the beginning of time. Me'olam ata, you have existed forever. You're eternal. Verse 3, Nos'u, so now it sort of changes themes. First it says that God has been the king. He was the king. He's been the king forever. And he's clothed in grandeur and in strength. And now we switch a little bit. The next two verses switch a little bit to a separate idea. Nos'u neharos Hashem, Nos'u neharos kolam, Yis'u neharos dachyam. So verse 3 here says, Nasu Naharos Hashem. Nasu Naharos is that the ocean sounds, it's raised. Hashem, Nasu Naharos Kolam, the rivers, the oceans raise its voice. And then Yisu Naharos, and the ocean is raised in its voice, Dachyam. Dachyam, that means it's broken. So in my mind, I'm picturing here sort of like a loud noise of the ocean, or of like a storm occurring. There's a lot of noise, or perhaps maybe a better imagery would be like a waterfall, because you have a waterfall with a lot of noise and then it crashes down, because dachyam, the last word here is dachyam, that it sort of crashes down. So you have water here that crashes down. We'll try to explain what exactly is this referring to. Mikolos mayim rabim adirim mishpirei yam. This is in verse 4. The thunder of the water, adirim mishpirayam, adir b'marom Hashem. But God is more majestic than the mishpirayam. This thunder of the sea, this breaking of the sea. God is on a higher level. God is mightier than the breaking of the sea. So it seems to be that there's some sort of idea here of either nature, or we'll see exactly what it's referring to, of some sort of power which is trying to become mightier than God, but God is really on top. That you have these loud noises of the water, and then the verse concludes by saying that really, but God is even greater than that. So it seems to be some sort of conflict here between this waterfall, this crashing of water, and God. So we'll see exactly what do you want to suggest?
Well, I was going to say, like, in Israel, when you think of being in Israel, when you go to the Mediterranean, those waves are crashing down. That is a powerful, powerful force coming at you. You can hear it from kilometers
away.
You can see the mist of the whoosh, whoosh, whoosh.
Yeah.
And that's just like, and that's not even a Black Flag Day. You know, so my thinking is how, like, the tides.
The tides, yeah.
And the things that from Hashem's creation of the moon and the earth and all the rest of that, we have the tides that they rotate on their own, so to speak.
They go on their own.
You know, and they have a power that is unbelievable.
Right. Right. So that's interesting.
And what about the floods?
Like even now, like right now, there's a flood in Israel.
The floods
right
of
now.
Today. The floods of today. We'll get to that. I wanted to get to that. There were serious floods in Israel yesterday.
Yeah. Like when there's rain
there was like
in
six
Israel,
people,
the ground doesn't
six
absorb.
People were killed or something?
There are at least three teenagers dead, and one missing, and several with injuries because of the flash flooding.
Yeah, there's major flooding. Yeah,
because that happens.
I've been driving,
and
too.
All of a sudden this comes gushing down, and the road's gone, and you're up to your waist in water, and it's pulling and forceful that.
Yeah, so
magnitude is so great.
Right.
Right.
We'll get to these ideas.
But it's interesting that you just said that the waters are trying to be greater than God. That's not what the English says.
In verse 4, if you see verse 4, it says, even in English, it says that Mikos Mayim Rabim, it says above the thunder of the mighty waters, what's more majestic than that? What's more majestic than the breakers of the sea is God. What's more majestic than the breakers of the sea?
Yes, I understand that, but that's different than...
It doesn't refer to a confrontation.
It's different than referring to a confrontation, which is what I thought you were.
Yeah.
You
so the commentators do they do explain that there is some sort of there is a confrontation here, and that you have the thundering water, that waterfall, and then but God is on top of that. So what exactly is that referring to? We'll get to exactly what that's referring to. And finally, the last verse Edosecha Nemnu Ma'od. Your witnesses are, or that's literally what it is, your witnesses are very much trustworthy. Nemnu, they're trustworthy. Leveischa Nava Kodesh, there's holiness in your house, referring to his house as the Beis HaMikdash, where our holy temple. Hashem L'Orech Hamim, Hashem for all times. God will be there for all times. So that's the last verse. So let's that's just the general reading of the chapter, and let's go through each one by one to see what comes out of this. Hashem Malach Gius Lavesh Lavesh Hashem Oz His Hazar. Going back to verse 1, Af Tikon Tevel Bal Timot. Hashem has ruled, and he is clothed in geyos, in grandeur. Hashem Oz His Hazar, and also in splendor, in strength. So God is clothed here. So.
But why is it spoken in the past tense?
Excellent question. Why is it in the past tense? So there are some explain that the entire chapter here is referring to the times of Mashiach. It's referring to the times of Mashiach, where we are able to reflect back on the history of the world when Mashiach comes. And when we reflect back on the history of the world, then we'll be able to see how God was ruling over the entire history of the world. Once Mashiach comes, we'll be able to have a clear picture of what God wanted throughout history. Right now we live in a time where it's very confusing to see God's hand in history. But when Mashiach comes, so then in the past tense, we'll be able to see that God was really the king, not just in the times of Mashiach, but throughout history. He's the God of history, that he has been ruling.
So this was written as if it's in the time of Mashiach.
Yeah, I mean, it was written before. But yeah, but it was for the times of Mashiach. What would happen in the times of Mashiach? It's giving you a picture of what would we be saying in the times of Mashiach.
Okay.
That's according to one opinion. Other opinions disagree, and they say that no, it's referring to our time, either to what's happening right now. And it's saying Hashem Malach, meaning it's for all of history, not just now, but for all of history. It says it in the past tense because there is some sort of theme here about the fact that Hashem was king. And that in the last verse it says Hashem l'orech hamim, that Hashem will be king forever. That it's just trying to tell you that Hashem is the king for all eternity, forever.
Was, is, and will be. Yeah.
And this is the theme of God becoming king. And when did this start? This started in the creation of Adam and Chava on the sixth day. That's when we were able to first pronounce God as king. So that's what Hashem Malach is. Hashem is king. Was king and is king. Geyos Lavish, he is clothed in geyos, in grandeur. And Lavash Hashem Oz Hizazar, and he wears strength. So let's think about the idea, why does he use the term clothing? That he's wearing grandeur, he's wearing strength. So just to focus on clothing, what is the purpose of clothing? What is clothing? Conceal is one. Definitely one is to conceal, which is very interesting, which means that God is, in a certain degree, he's concealing his grandeur. Or what? He's concealing something at least here. So the clothing definitely it conceals your who you are, in a physical sense, who you are physically. But what else does the clothing accomplish?
Protection.
Yeah, well, it sets boundaries and it kind of
there's status. What do you mean by status?
I mean, you know, you can often tell by looking at a person's clothing what status they are, whether they're a beggar or whether they're a king or anybody in between.
Excellent. Clothing also.
We've just been reading about the high priest and his clothing.
Yes, sure, yeah. So clothing accomplishes two things. I think it accomplishes, it conceals really who you are, your essence, but it also, it does reveal a certain status. It does give a certain status, or it shows you which not just in terms of like a beggar or a king, but different groups of people wear different types of clothing. It gives you...
Like what Rivka was saying.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. The priest wear a certain type of clothing. So it gives you a certain, it does give you a certain identity, clothing. I'm good.
One little more?
No, I'm fine.
Okay.
Thank you. So God apparently is concealing himself, but at the same time he's wearing geus, he's wearing grandeur, and he's also wearing strength. So what is the idea behind this? So I think we'll see this, one second, we'll see this in the next source, but even when God does reveal himself in this world, when there are moments in time where God reveals himself through open miracles and through his hand in the world, there's a difference between God himself and how he interacts with the world.
Yeah.
There's God interacting with the world, and then there's God himself. I think the great example is that you'll never know me entirely. Even my wife won't know me entirely. She'll know how I relate to her.
And how you present yourself.
And how I present myself. But to know my essence, I hope I know my essence myself, but to know my essence, nobody will know that. They'll just know how I interact with them. So too, in terms of God, we'll never know God's essence. We'll just know how, when he does directly interact with the world, we'll know how God interacts with the world. But in terms of God's essence, so that's covered. That's covered by his clothing. So we'll see his grandeur. We'll see his strength. But that's covered. That's his clothing. We won't see his essence. We'll never fully understand God. We might create some sort of picture, like my wife will know me best, so she'll create some sort of picture in terms of it, and she'll get very close. But in terms of knowing a person's essence, so then you don't know a person's essence fully, so too we won't know God fully. We won't really have, we won't know God's essence. And I think that's why they're using a language of clothing, that we won't really fully know God, but we'll have some, we'll be able to create some picture of God.
Is that why he turned his back to Moshe?
I'm sure that's definitely a part of it, that we'll never know God fully.
No,
we'll know his back. I think that is the idea. We'll know his back. When you picture somebody walking and you can only see their back, so then you don't get their identity. You just get their movements. You don't get a complete picture of them. So I think it's very much connected to that. You wanted to say something.
I wanted to ask you, is geut, is that the same root as ge'ah? Pride?
Yeah, pride. Hori. Yeah.
Okay. Because you know what? It can also... that influences the way you think of the clothing.
It does. But in this... It's clothing of pride.
You know? That's a big word.
That is definitely a big word. So just to show you, if you look at the bottom source here, this is a medrash. The medrash says, Lavash HaKadosh Baruch Hu Asar Levushim. God wore clothing... 10 times. He wore 10 different clothing. He wore 10 different garments. And it goes through the list. Biyom Riyasu Shel Olam, when he created the world, when he punished the generation of the flood, when he gave the Torah to the Jewish people, when he punished the different kingdoms of the world, and also in the future when he punishes Edom, and finally by the war of Gog and Magog. So these are all different time periods in history, where God is openly revealing himself to the world. He's revealing himself to the world. And so that's the concept of clothing, that God is wearing clothing, because that's the point in time where we see his status. When he created the world, it's both in the sense of God showing who he is by in the positive sense, that he created the world, that he gave us the Torah, but also in the sense of punishing those who were wicked. He punishes the generation of the flood, and that also shows, that's also a form of clothing that God wears, that both in the sense of the positive, of giving the Torah to the Jewish people, and also in terms of punishing those who are not following his ways.
And it also sounds to me like when it talks about him wearing 10 different garments during these different times, that the different garments, that each garment would show a portion of his essence, And that's about the closest we can get.
Yes, I agree. I agree to that. These are all different. These are all different garments. He's wearing different garments.
Yeah.
So these are different. We're getting a different picture of God each time. I agree. I definitely agree to that.
I've been really bothered, well, everybody has, about the Shoah, and I don't see a punishment for it. And then during davening, I've discovered why. God works slowly. It says that several times. And that's very reassuring. Because when you look back at these events listed here, those things came slowly.
Yeah, they came slowly. Yeah, the Shoah is very hard to. It's very.
No one's explaining it.
No one's explaining it, and it's.
You can't help wanting.
Yeah.
Things.
Yeah, but in the times of Mashiach, hopefully we'll have. We're promised to have clarity over how. How God decided for...
Is there any one of our sages who is able to tell us that we're getting closer? Or there are signs? Or...
That there are signs to Mashiach coming?
Yeah.
It's hard to know. It's hard to know. I definitely think that... It's hard to know. God did give us the land... God gave us the land of Israel after not having it for so many years. So that... I think now it's up to us to make sure that we're able to keep it. We have to keep Israel. But God definitely, I think that's definitely a gift that God gave us to use. And hopefully that will be in a direction where ultimately Mashiach will come. Yeah, hopefully. Okay, Av Tikkun Teva Baal Timot. So, and then the verse says that God has shown himself, but also Av Tikkun Teva Baal Timot, that the world stands firm. And it won't be shaken. At the end of verse 1. End of verse 1.
Okay.
The Malbim, one of the commentators here, he explains that the theme throughout, his understanding of this entire chapter, is that there's a focus here on both the natural and the supernatural. That God is able to reveal himself both in the natural and in the supernatural. In the beginning, it focuses on the supernatural, that God clothes these different garments when he reveals himself openly to us. But then there's also Avtikon Teva Baal Timot, that the world is firm and it's natural. It won't be shaken, and the world will just continuously exist. And God allowed nature to exist. And we have both forms. And he goes on to say that which one would you think is more miraculous? I don't know about miraculous, but which one is more revealing of God, the supernatural or the natural? And most people would say the supernatural. That's when we can see God openly. But he says, no, it's not true. He says it's the natural. Yeah. Mm-hmm. He says the supernatural is a moment. Mm-hmm. It's a moment. God gave us the Torah. That took, how long did that take? A half an hour? I don't know. However long that took. I don't know how long that process was.
Standard time. At least an hour and a half.
Let's say an hour and a half, whatever. I'm sure they had, I'm sure there was food there. I don't know. People had to come, right?
And everything around us existing. That's far bigger.
It's a bigger miracle. The fact that nature has been in existence throughout history. And he goes on to say even that, I think he might say this in one of the later verses, when he's commenting one of the later verses, he says that even when there's something, a supernatural miracle occurs, the miracle, even within that, is that God allows nature to continue to exist even as that other supernatural incident's happening. Which itself is miraculous, that the rest of nature could continue to exist even as that other supernatural incident is happening. So he says that's also a theme here, that God reveals himself in the supernatural, but also within the natural. In verse 2, Nachon kis'acha me'az me'olam ata, that God's throne stands firm me'az from all of time, from the beginning of time, me'olam ata, that God has existed from all of time. That's also part of the theme of the fact that God has always been in existence, and God, in the end, the last three words is that God will exist for all of time, which is not just about the fact that God is beyond time, but it's also about the fact that shows us that God
eternal, is
what?
Eternal,
and that he's leading the way. That the world will continue to exist. It's not just that God created the 6 days of creation, and that's it. but God allows the world to continue to exist forever. Nasu, now we get on to verse 3, where the theme shifts a little bit. Nasu naros Hashem, Nasu naros kolam, Yisu naros dachem. There's these thundering noise of these waterfalls, of these storms. So what exactly is this referring to? What is this imagery? So there are different explanations that are given. Either this is sometimes when nature has, God created nature in such a way where it will not disturb, in general, mankind, or just the general equilibrium. That there's, nature should, in terms of nature itself, it shouldn't, water shouldn't destroy society, it shouldn't destroy people. But sometimes it happens that you have that thundering storm, like what existed this week in Israel.
And what about Noah and the flood?
Well, that was intervention from God. Mm-hmm. But even when we have these things, it's also an intervention from God. But it's perceived as just nature not going according to its path. And so some say that this is referring to times when there's a real storm where it could kill people, and then we don't see what's going on here. Where's the hand of God? Why isn't God protecting us from this water? Others explain that it's not actually referring to water, it's just an imagery that's referring to our enemies. That we have our enemies who constantly mock us, and they say that, where is your God? We're the ones that are on top. And so they have this loud noise, that our enemies have this loud, loud, thundering noise. If you think about it, when you go right next to a waterfall, it's very nice. People like to go see a waterfall. And when you're not so close, so you hear the water, yeah. And it's a nice sound. It's a nice relaxing sound. But as you get closer and closer,
it gets deafening.
You can't talk. It's so loud that it's impossible to talk. And so that's the enemies. When you're so close, that you just it's so loud that there's nothing else that you could hear. You can't hear the voice of God. It's just so loud that it's overbearing. And so that's how others explain it. That this is this loud voice of the waterfall, dachyam. But ultimately, it'll shatter. Dachyam is actually, I don't think this word is found anywhere else in Tanakh, but dachyam is this word of like it'll break. That will break. And then mikolos mayim rabim adirim mishpirei yam adir b'marom Hashem. That even though you have this loud voice of the water, what's on top of that is what's mightier than that and more majestic than that is God Himself. That the truth is that even though it's very loud, and it's deafening, you can't hear anything else, but God is really ultimately the one that's behind everything. That God is there.
I had a parallel in my life, in a way, scuba diving. You go out on the ocean, and it can be quite scary out there. You know, big surges and things you can't see from one wave to the next. And then you just fall overboard and go down, and suddenly there's God. Because everything's there. It's just, there's so much there. And it's so different from land.
That's interesting. It's also an interesting
imagery. I can visualize that. I've scuba dived. So
yeah.
And the first thing that came to mind was, oh my God, there's like a whole nother world down there.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
It's the coolest thing.
That's very interesting.
So, yeah, I would agree. Like, there's all this chaos, but then underneath.
And then underneath that, it's quiet there's and peace and calm.
It's beautiful.
Yeah.
That's very interesting.
It's noisy, but
yeah.
It's different though.
It's noisy?
Underwater, yes.
Oh.
Critters make lots of noise.
Oh. But it's different.
It's a very different kind of noise. Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
If you turn the page to the last source on the second page, it quotes, there's a medrash here that quotes our verse also. It says, but this is a different interpretation in a positive sense, that what are the waters that we're referring to here? It says, Kach mitzchilas b'riyasu shel olam, lo haya kilusu shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu ola ela min hamayim. The only entity that really praised God was the water. The water was the one that first praised God. How do we know that? Hadehu d'chsev mikolos mayim rabim adirim mishpirei yam. It quotes our verse in a positive sense. Until now, we've been saying it as a sort of a negative sense, that it's like the enemies of God. Here, it's in a positive sense that the waters are calling out to God. How are they praising God? By being miraculous in their nature. That they are nature, and so that itself is calling out to God. That's a form of praising God by them just being themselves. So Amar Kadosh Baruch Hu, so after he created water, Hashem said, this is what the Medrash says, Maim Elu She'ein Lan Lo Pev Lo Amir Lo Dibor, water which doesn't have a mouth, it can't talk, V'arehein Mekalsanosi, and they are praising me, K'she'ever Adam Malachas Kamav Kamav, so then once I create man, so then certainly they'll praise me. So Alma Dora Mabul Marbo, so then the Dora Mabul came, the generation of the flood came, and they rebelled against God, Amar Kadosh Baruch Hu, Yifunu Elu V'yamdu V'yavo Osan Shiyashu Behen Mikodem. So I thought that they would praise me. It didn't happen. So I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to get rid of them and I'm going to bring back the water. Hadahu Dechsiv V'yihi Hageshem Al Ha'aretz Arba'im Yom V'arba'im Laila. And that's what it says, that God brought the flood. It starts rain for 40 days and 40 nights. So
To start again.
It's a rebirth.
It's really starting again. The why specifically was the punishment for the generation of the flood itself? Why was it the flood which was the punishment? And the reason for that is because it's not just any punishment, but it's really a punishment of starting over, of let's bring back the water, and start back. Let's bring back the water and we'll start back again. The water was the one that first praised God. Let's bring that back and we'll start back again. What was your idea?
Interesting that you would go that way. I was thinking that when you first think of the world, that they, that when there was a void.
You're right. That's also excellent.
And it was just water.
It was just water.
And
so that too.
From the water that everything was then.
Excellent. That too.
The land, the animals, the.
Yes. So it started off with just water before there was even land.
Was just water.
Excellent. Yeah. So
and
that.
And then the other thing, when you say when it brings it back to the 40 days and 40 nights, Parshat Noach is very special to me, for different reasons. But the other thing that is relatable is that the 40 days and 40 nights. Bereon, when you're pregnant for 40 weeks. That's a full-term pregnancy.
Yeah.
I've never done that. That's a full-term pregnancy. 40 is such a complete, it's a rebirth.
It's a rebirth, yes. And that is also what our rabbis also tell us, that the 40 days refers to like a rebirth. So that's exactly what it's referring
from
to.
From water to water. That's the beginning. That was the
And then we're starting anew.
Starting again. Yeah.
Yeah. That's exactly what it's referring to. Some explain that these waters are referring to as enemies of God, and this measure says that no, it's really about praising God, that these waters are really the exact opposite. It's really about praising God. So there's two very different...
Like the water being the only thing existent first, it would give reason that the water would offer praise because from it...
Started everything.
It was the derivatives.
Yeah. So finally, the last verse, Idosecha nemnu me'od leveischa navakodesh Hashem l'orech yamim. And so we say that your testimony will last forever in the house of Hashem. You will last forever, and that's the concluding verse that Hashem was the ruler. He is the ruler, and he will be the ruler. Just the last point is, what is Idosecha? What is this testimony referring to? So those that say that it's referring to the times of Mashiach, that this whole thing is referring to the times of Mashiach, it's referring to the testimonies of the prophets. The prophets that told us that Mashiach will come. So that testimony will come true. That prophecy will come true. Others explain that it's referring to nature. That nature is testimony of God, and nature lasts forever. Nature itself is testimony to God. And finally, the last explanation is what is this testimony referring to? The Jewish people. The Jewish people itself is the testimony that we will last forever, that we have all the other kingdoms, as we saw in the bottom source here, all the other kingdoms have risen and fallen, but we continue to last forever. And so we ourselves are the testimony that there will be a time where we will rebuild the Beis HaMikdash, and we'll be able to have this picture of seeing God in His fullest glory, in His clothed glory. We won't see His essence, but we'll see His clothing, of His grandeur and of His strength. And that's how the chapter ends. And so this is very appropriate for the sixth day of creation, where God created man. It's about having creation last forever. It will continue to last. I don't know about forever, but it will continue to last through the times of Mashiach. And it's about acknowledging that God is the King.
I find it really interesting that